Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This.
Under which country's governance does Love Island fall?
Which of the Danny Dyers would win in a brawl?
Now, listeners, I'm pleased to say that our co-host for the last 11 years, Helen Zaltzman, is alive.
I'm alive. She's alive.
I'm pretty pleased about that.
Yes.
Good.
For reasons other than the podcast.
So, and for people listening in the future who won't be sensitive to the time release schedule having been delayed of this podcast, let's just enlighten what has happened over the past few weeks, Helen.
It's been a strange few weeks. If you're sensitive to discussion of medical stuff, maybe fast forward the next couple of minutes. I'm in Tasmania in mid-June. I got tonsillitis and it broke bad, basically. I woke up one night, an hour after I went to bed, and my whole neck had swelled up and I looked like Nanny from Count Dracula.
Always finding the positive.
I went to the doctor, who was like, go to the hospital, I don't know what this is.
That's not news you want to hear, is it?
But it turned out what I had is something quite unusual in people who are over 8. It was something called retropharyngeal abscesses.
Pharyngeal.
Because they happen behind your pharynx.
Uh-huh.
There's a load of unused space in your neck, like an attic in your neck, that whereas in the attic you might put your suitcases and Christmas decorations.
Or paintings.
In your neck you might put abscesses full of pus when your immune system is doing something wacky, as mine was. So I had to have surgery. And I had to be in intensive care for a few days after said surgery with a breathing pipe.
Oh, I see.
Because the abscesses were close around my breathing hole and my aorta, they wanted to tube me in case my breathing hole swelled up and I died.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert on medical conditions, but it does seem that a blockage of the breathing hole would be one that you'd want to avoid.
Breathing hole is one of the many medical terms I've learned from this experience.
My only experience of Australian hospitals is soap operas where everybody dies. Was it like that?
Well, I didn't die, so not everyone died.
Did you see Todd's ghost?
Oh, well, no, I was in a ward where everyone was in their 80s apart from me. And I felt like quite the spring lamb in that company, because people are like, oh, your blood pressure's low because you're so young.
And how is Martin as a respite carer?
Martin was a real champion. And I felt like I was fairly lucid during the 5 days I was in intensive care. And he got to witness.
She was off her tits.
Martin, what was the weirdest thing she did?
She didn't do anything odd. She would just write these sentences that were complete gibberish and then get really annoyed when no one understood what she was talking about.
Because I couldn't speak because I had the tube. I was trying to communicate by writing on my phone.
She did a Facebook update which contained 2 typos.
Wow.
And at that point, everyone got really worried.
Yeah, that's what really tipped off my friend Amy that things were serious.
Oh my God. Have you just come out of a coma?
Technically, yes.
Yeah, technically I was in a coma. In a medically induced coma.
Yeah, how was that?
Well, pretty peaceful for me. I'd imagine a bit worrying for Martin, because I didn't know it was happening at the time, and he did.
What? Didn't they tell you?
They didn't use the term coma, which I think was a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a panic-inducing term, and I think when it's a medically induced coma that they're in control of, they should probably use a different term than coma, I think.
I agree. They need a different word, don't they? Time for your drug sleep, not coma.
Excellent thing about being in hospital for 3.5 weeks from mid-June to mid-July 2018 was that I totally missed the Football World Cup. Didn't have a television, didn't have much Wi-Fi, and none of the nurses seemed to give a shit. Richard in Bristol enjoyed watching the World Cup, but he says, the problem is I have a 4-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter. During the games, they were constantly hounding me to change the TV to Paw Patrol.
Oh, God. I don't know what visual crack they put in that show, but Harvey will not take a shit unless it's in a Paw Patrol potty. It's wow. extraordinary, the hold that it has over children over a certain age.
It's dogs with different professions, right?
One of them's a firefighter. Mm-hmm. One of them's a police officer of some description. One of them drives some kind of green tank.
Hmm. So they're public servants, but dogs. Richard says, "The only part of the football my children took interest in is when the players walk out accompanied by a child. My eldest has got very excited about being one of these player walkout kids. We live in Bristol, and my team, Sheffield Wednesday, will play Bristol City in October this year. Ollie, answer me this. How hard would it be to get my daughter to accompany a Bristol City player?"
If you're a Sheffield Wednesday fan, why would you want your kid walking out with the other team? Surely you want them to walk out with Sheffield Wednesday, don't you? Or is that not how the mascot thing works? Isn't there a risk that you'd sabotage the game? Like if you had a really devious 11-year-old that they just sort of quietly stabbed the striker's knee or something?
Do they not vet these children for violent urges against the players?
All you need to do to walk in with the Bristol City team is buy a mascot package. That's what it's called.
Oh.
And for £200, it would have been 150 quid had the game been midweek, but I checked Sheffield Wednesday versus Bristol City is on a Sunday.
Right, that was very assiduous of you.
For £200, you get a mascot ticket mm-hmm. plus 3 guest tickets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That seems a bit more reasonable if it's £200 for 4.
Yeah, exactly. So here what else you get.
Yeah.
You get premier seating in the Lansdowne stand. I assume that's a good seat.
Mm-hmm.
You get to meet the players in the new home changing room.
Ooh.
Bit of a strange place to send a young girl, but whatever, if that's the thing people like to do. You get to have a pre-match buffet in the mascot lounge.
Ooh.
Now, mascot lounge, so with the other kids, pre-match buffet, that just means chips, doesn't it?
Is it just like when people buy the chance to do a meet and greet with Katy Perry after her concert? So you're in there with the 18
exactly
other people
like
that paid a grand for that. Right. Okay, carry on.
Yes. You get your name and photo in the match day programme.
Yeah.
You get a certificate of participation.
Right.
You get a PA announcement, but that's the bit I'd like. you get a pre-match warm-up. Does that mean you, after you've seen the young men getting changed, you watch them lithe up? Bit odd, isn't it? And then you get to lead out the team and have a photo with the captain, which is the bit that we all see on telly.
Okay.
So actually, to watch the football, it does now cost £25 to £35 a ticket. So £100 to go and watch it for a family of four anyway. So you'd expect it to be double that to walk on with the team.
Take a Tupperware and raid that buffet.
So I don't think it's an outrageous price, but also I think it is a bit sad that that is how you come to do it. That you just hand over £200.
Do you have to wear a special thing as well? Do you have to pay extra to buy the strip of the club? Because those are always super expensive.
That's true, yeah.
Can a child just go out in their normal clothes?
I've never seen it done.
Hmm.
Turn up in your Sheffield Wednesday uniform.
Turn up just in an Everton strip at the Sheffield Wednesday yeah. versus Bristol City game. Ultimate troll. Here's another question of sports, sort of, from Laura from Kent, who says, "This morning I visited my local public swimming pool to get in a quick swim before work.
Uh-huh.
The pool I go to has communal unisex showers. These communal unisex showers are suitable for a rinse off and possibly washing your hair. That's as far as I thought it would be acceptable to go when showering in the presence of strangers. My fellow showerers appeared to disagree with me. I was sharing the shower with two men who felt it acceptable to put their hands down the front of their swimming trunks and have a good old scrub of their undercarriage, front and back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all in favour of personal hygiene, and yes, it is important to keep yourself clean, especially if they were going straight off to work and people have smelt the chlorine on their perineums. But also, chlorine can get really itchy on your skin, and I'm assuming on the sensitive undercarriage, people would want to rid themselves of that.
Yeah, testes, foreskin possibly, lots of areas there.
Lots of areas. But Ollie, answer me this, says Laura, is it really okay to have that thorough a wash in a communal shower? What is communal shower etiquette? How far should you go when showering in public?
I can identify with the issue, especially when there are children around, of being in a communal unisex area and showering and thinking to myself, do I forego a cleaner penis and just not take the risk of offending anyone or upsetting anyone by, you know, only quasi-graphically putting my hand onto it?
I was wondering why you brought up children, because I was thinking when I was a child and I was in swimming pool changing rooms with my granny or my granddad, I would see adults naked and think, well, that's just...
Floppers out everywhere, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, just normal. But then you're thinking putting your hand down your trunks and rubbing
exactly
with children present would be interpreted in a way that was not intended.
Well, only by crazy people, because, you know, I think any objective analysis would show that I would not have an erection, I would not be being inappropriate, I would be cleaning my penis and balls, but still, the fact that that conversation might then ensue puts me off. So if I'm being honest, I'm aware of the issue you highlight, Laura, but fundamentally, I disagree that anyone who chooses to wash their undercarriage through their swimming trunks is doing anything wrong. You know, they didn't get their cock and balls out and scrub it along the tiles. That would be too far. Anything else? Look, if it's bothering you, I'm sorry. They don't want a chlorinated cock, and fair enough.
Who would?
How are they supposed to do it? Are they supposed to wait till they're in the privacy of their changing cubicle and dip their wick in a bottle of Evian? They have the opportunity in the communal area to wash, and that's the opportunity they're taking.
What layout is the shower at Laura's communal changing room? Is it in the round? Because you could just turn around and face the wall while you're doing your intimate scrubbing, couldn't you?
Good point.
I think there's a mutual acceptance in this situation that... we'll say most people find it a bit awkward to shower communally.
Mm.
And therefore, they might be debating within themselves as well, rather than doing this proudly, but needs must. You're all showering.
Yes.
Therefore, you recognise the function of pouring fresh water onto your body to rinse off your swim. So why are you being such a troublemaker, Laura? You're all just the same.
If you've got a question, email your question to answermethispodcast@googlemail.com. 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 Answermethispodcast@googlemail.com.
So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for a question from Jacob from Liverpool, who says, I am well into a second contract with a well-known entertainment cruise line company.
Ooh.
We are currently charting our way around the Alaskan fjords.
Oh, beautiful. I would like to go.
So would I.
Let's go, Ollie.
Don't know if I'd like to go on a cruise ship, though, as such. Like, obviously, you have to do a boat trip to see the fjords, but I don't know if I'd want, like, 3 weeks at sea to see them.
I think you can do a week. Let's do a week.
Okay.
Treat ourselves.
What more can I say, says Jacob. The air is so fresh. The landscape views are breathtaking.
I bet.
With the Aaron Copland and Thomas Newman themes they pump around guest areas, it's an ideal situation for all the senses.
Okay.
I didn't know. I guess it makes sense that particularly sort of big corporate-owned cruise lines would do that just to really... you know, manipulate every part of the experience of being on board.
But... and also probably to cover up some engine noise and air conditioning noise.
Yeah. I suppose the only real concern would be if they played My Heart Will Go On. That's when you'd worry. Anyway, Jacob continues. I am the ship's only onboard cosmetologist.
What is that?
Jacob takes care of the performers' wigs and makeup.
Wow.
Oh, right. Okay.
So he's a costume... technician, basically, cosmetologist.
Our listeners have truly fascinating jobs, don't they?
My mornings include, he says, washing, setting, dressing out, and then maintaining the wigs for the shows and characters, as well as dressing our numerous shows and characters in and out of costumes in the evening, and then helping with the laundry at the end of the seemingly never-ending day.
Oh, that must suck. Like midnight and you've got a load of sweaty performance clothes to deal with.
Yes and no. I mean, I've just interviewed someone, funnily enough. It's going to come out in a couple of weeks' time on The Modern Man. But I've just interviewed a guy called Andy. Actually, he listens to Answer Me This. So,
hi, Andy.
Hey, Andy. Who for a period worked for Disney Cruises. In the 90s. So I'm going to put out an episode called Cruising with Mickey. I mean, I really just did it for the title. And he talks about how when you're on a ship, even though it seems ridiculous that you're working that many hours a day, like it is your whole life because you live there.
Yeah.
So it's not, you can take hours off during the day. You are chatting to guests. He can take time to look at the views. Jacob continues. There are only three of us in what is known as the costume department. There's the senior costume, the costume assistant, and me, the cosmetologist. In recent talks with my shoreside cosmetologist leaders, We've discussed making cosmetology a separate department from the costume department on board. Then, in time, I would secure my own space and become an officer myself.
Oh, cool. First officer of cosmetology.
Yeah. And I would be able to create my own schedules, laundry not included.
Yes, just wigs, no clothes.
I've been explaining to my onboard leaders that I need more time to work on wigs rather than laundry and costume maintenance. And that's working well, as they understand maintaining our 300 plus wigs on board.
Wow!
Jesus, isn't that like
plus.
A wig for every child?
I think that was one of Bill Gates' less successful campaigns, wasn't it?
I can't fix up all the wigs I would like, ensuring character integrity for our guests' enjoyment because of laundry maintenance.
Hey,
that's an interesting phrase, isn't it? Character integrity. I wonder if he works for Disney.
Because
the guy I interviewed, Andy, he was saying the guys at Disney understandably take this stuff very seriously. And that phrase reeks of that, doesn't it? Character integrity. You know, no one can see Minnie with her head off, all that kind of stuff.
Does say well-known entertainment cruise line company.
Yeah, I wonder if it is.
Mm.
Sorry, Jacob, if you wanted to be subtle about that, but I reckon you work for Disney.
He was subtle.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, exactly. He's done nothing wrong. My recent problem in the saga for change is that my boss has started to take it upon herself to move and transport and deliver items such as facial hair, wigs and head accessories to dressing rooms and performers during her breaks.
How dare she?
Mutiny! Shove her overboard!
Maybe she thinks she's being helpful because she's like... Jacob is so busy and he was here till midnight doing the laundry and then up at 5 doing the wigs. I'll just help him out without being a bother.
Exactly. It sounds like you've briefed her about how busy you are and that's why you need more time to focus on wigs. So she's trying to help in the wrong way is what this seems like to me. My senior, he says, is new to the company in her current position. I get the feeling she just wants to do the greater good rather than personal gain. Yet she doesn't understand. She could get me and the other assistant to share the workload, which she's keeping to herself.
Mm-hmm.
She complains of sleeping poorly and wanting to murder most of the cast and crew.
Oh, this sounds like it's going to work out well.
Yeah, he's put in brackets, in jest, of course.
Sure, it's in jest now.
There is also a tiny language barrier, as she's originally Spanish, and I sometimes revert back to a thick Scouse accent.
Okay.
So, Helen, answer me this. How do I explain to her that I am the cosmetologist, and I am the only one that should be dealing with all the hairy, furry side of things? There are just as many costume jobs for those two to sort out amongst themselves. Do I go to a higher level of management to ask advice and try not to sound like a dick? Maybe even HR, as I feel my senior may be overwhelmed with work and stress. The incident in question that prompted me to contact you is that she phoned me during her break to ask about a certain pirate's facial hair, items and makeup. This guy's definitely Disney, isn't he? That's Jack Sparrow, isn't he, he's talking about?
Shush.
What other famous pirate could he be talking about?
Captain Pugwash.
I would love to go on the Captain Pugwash Alaskan cruise.
What about Captain Hook?
Yeah, what if it's a J.M. Barrie cruise?
Sure, could be. J.M. Barrie cruise, absolutely, yeah. To ask me about certain pirates' facial hair items and makeup, where they are and what they look like, so she could transfer them to another location on the ship, which made me question her work ethics.
Why?
Exactly, she's just trying to chip in, right? Surely anyone else would have just made me do the task, which wasn't necessary, as he only wanted the wig to rehearse in.
Mm-hmm.
After telling her how I feel about her doing my work, which means a lot to me because I want the job done right, obviously, I still feel she doesn't understand the escalating situation and how it is consuming me.
Yeah, because I think it's escalating in your head and consuming you. So I think you're taking this too personally. Because
I agree.
I know you feel like your authority as the ship's only cosmetologist is being undermined, but it sounds like she's doing quite menial fetching and carrying jobs, as you've described them, rather than trying to thrust you aside so she can be the officer of cosmetology. In which case, I think you just keep explaining to her. Maybe say, you seem stressed as shit today. Take a load off. Don't worry about this stuff. I think we could work more efficiently. You deal with the costumes. So I'm not going to help with the laundry, but I am going to do all of this running around with wigs and moustaches for pirates that you've taken on yourself. Don't worry about that. And just keep persisting with that. And maybe you have a friend on the crew that is bilingual in Scouse and Spanish and could maybe be present. So if she is finding anything in English... difficult to understand, because I'd imagine professional vocabulary in a language that's not your first language is pretty fucking difficult, even if you've been speaking the other languages for a long time. Maybe that would be a useful backup. But also, if the onshore and offshore leaders have agreed, you need to get them to establish your own space that you've asked for, and then it will be a bit harder for her to interfere, won't it? Because you won't be in the same room as her.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, though, she is your senior, and she's been appointed as such. So I sort of never fail to be amazed at the human ability to define a job for ourselves, which in a way is great because it's where entrepreneurialism comes from, and it's where people getting promoted comes from, doesn't it? Making the most of the opportunities they have. But at the end of the day, she's your boss, so actually, even if she's being annoying and doesn't seem to fully understand your role as cosmetologist, it's like tough shit. Like, aim to be her. Don't aim to, put her in her place.
Yeah, well, it does also sound like she's trying to be helpful and you feel undermined because you think she's doing this because she thinks you don't have it under control because some bosses are micromanagers and you don't want to be micromanaged.
Also, she might be, if she's new on the ship and she's new to the position, she might be feeling insecure. Maybe she was just trying to cozy up to Jack Sparrow. Sorry, Captain Hugwash. And actually, you know, he has an important role in the cast and crew on board because he's an important character. You know, so maybe she was just trying to get some face time there. And actually, maybe let her have that. Because, okay, she might not know what she's doing with the wig. And that might piss you off when you're watching it from the audience and think it's not that great.
I assume that is part of Jacob's problem, that she's fucking up the wigs.
Yes, and people blame it on him. As the only onboard cosmetologist.
And creating more work for him.
Yeah, but her motives might be not laudable, but understandable if you put yourself in her shoes.
But I'd imagine that workplace situations are apt to foment and make you more annoyed than rationally you need to be. And that is amplified when you are trapped on a boat.
Yes.
And working all the hours of the day.
Also, I just think generally, like, you know, away from big ships, it's often the case that bosses know more than they share with their juniors. You know, there's a need-to-know basis, isn't there? There may be an agenda you know absolutely nothing about, or there may be details that you know absolutely nothing about, big-picture stuff that she knows that you don't. I think back to when I was a TV researcher about 10 years ago, and I worked for various different companies, but there's one in particular when I was working at the BBC where I had a boss that used to come to our desk monologuing to us at length ideas that we'd already got off the ground.
Yeah.
And I remember we always used to bitch to ourselves and be like, why is he doing, like, you know, if he's complaining we're not coming up with ideas quickly enough, why is he coming over here and taking up our time telling us ideas we've already pitched to him and got off the ground? And then I realized one day that it wasn't really for our benefit at all. The reason he was doing that is because he then had to go to his boss and pitch our ideas to his boss. And he was basically just rehearsing his patter. And so our role then was to be a sounding board for him in a way that felt redundant to us, but if you thought about the big picture, it sort of made sense.
Yeah.
So there may be a reason that you just don't know.
Yeah, or sometimes people do that because they want to feel some kind of ownership of what's going on. And that is annoying when you feel usurped and underappreciated and underrewarded.
But also, we don't like this situation, do we, generally speaking, where bosses get to a high level within a corporate culture having never spent any time on the shop floor.
Yeah.
I mean, this woman has come onto the boat. She wants to understand how the wigs work.
Mm. She's rolled her sleeves up.
Yeah, exactly. You're the wig specialist. She's not saying she can do it better than you. She wants an understanding of wigs so that she can be your boss. And in a way, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe set her down, say, how's the job going for you? It's a lot of work, isn't it? You do say that you want to kill people. Are you okay? Presumably, this is what HR are for. If you are really pissed off, they are the people to go to. But I think maybe you don't need to be as pissed off as you are, the way that you've described it. And perhaps we're misreading your email, but you have included quite a lot of information. So I think you're taking this personally, but maybe it's not meant personally.
I agree.
Get your own room for the wigs. That's the important thing, isn't it? Tell them to, like, rip out one of the shrimp buffets and let it be the wiggery.
The Silicon Roundabout's my favourite place. To become a webpreneur would be really ace. Like that awesome guy, Tom, who was my first friend on MySpace. We haven't kept in touch.
Get your foot on the ladder to online success. Through Squarespace, build a site and get a free web address. Then hang around East London until you get hired in the US.
Mountain View is calling. Google have free buffet.
Thank you very much to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of Answer Me This. And if you've been thinking that you want to set up your own website,
then have we got a platform for you.
Squarespace has templates all ready to go, award-winning templates, and then drag and drop tools so that you can construct the functions that you want.
And they have Google Search Console integrated. So that means you can identify now using Squarespace the keywords that are driving traffic to your site. So you can understand how you rank in search.
Ooh.
So, for example, if you come to realize that the most popular blog on your site was the comment you wrote about itchy knuckles, because, I don't know, there's a scarcity of other sites covering that, bingo, turn your store that sells disposable contact lenses into a site for people that helps people with their scabby knuckle skin. That's the kind of information you get, you see, and then you can say, ah, people with scabby knuckles are interested in my website. That should be the direction for my business moving forward. And that's free.
So go to squarespace.com/answer and you can have a 2-week trial for free and use Squarespace's features and get used to them and build a little website for yourself.
And then if you want to translate that trial into the fully fledged website of your dreams, you get 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain using our code
answer.
Hello, it's Jimmy from South London. I've been thinking about the film Castaway with Tom Hanks. So, Helen and Ollie, answer me this. How come FedEx allowed the film to use its name and its branding and all that kind of stuff, even though the whole premise of the film is that he works at FedEx, he's on a FedEx plane, the FedEx plane crashes, and then he's on an island for 4 years?
I have not seen the film Castaway, but now I feel like I have. I didn't know that it was a FedEx-related tragedy that precipitated 4 years alone on the island with just Wilson the ball. But now I do. Thank you, Jimmy.
So yes, on a superficial level, that looks like a bad promotional opportunity for FedEx. I'd agree. However, there are a few things you need to consider. First, and primarily, I would say, Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
In the late 90s, early 2000s, Tom Hanks was the pinnacle between commercial success and critical favour. Think about it. It's a 2.5-hour long film about one man alone on an island. They sold it on the basis of Tom Hanks.
Everyone wants to be alone with Tom Hanks for 2.5 hours.
And this was after Forrest Gump. They were basically saying, you know, after this film that was massively commercially successful and won Best Picture, would you like to be associated with the next one from the same director and actor? Answer, yes. To almost any brand, the answer's yes.
Apparently, also, the FedEx thing was Tom Hanks's idea. Because he was like, FedEx planes cross the Pacific 3 times a day. What if one fell out the sky? The brand was, it was not irreplaceable, but it was pretty instrumental to the plot from the sounds of it.
Robert Zemeckis, the director, had said it was important to have a real company.
Yeah.
Because it was so central to the story. If it was Dave's Careers or whatever, it wouldn't be convincing. The audience would think it was Hollywood hokum, and it was supposed to feel like a true, it wasn't a true story, although it was based on some true stories and accounts of being stranded and stuff, but it was supposed to feel like it could have been a real life story, and this is the movie they made of it. So it really helps that he worked for a real company.
And FedEx, they said that they were alarmed when it was first pitched, but then they said that their global brand awareness went through the roof after the film. It was high in the US already, but outside of the US, they did really well out of it. And also job applications went up 30% after the film.
Yeah.
And the founder of FedEx plays himself in the film, so FedEx were on board.
I find that odd. That, like, so the end of the climax of the movie is actually filmed at FedEx's HQ in Memphis.
Right.
That, I think, is bizarre, with a real CEO in it. Especially since money did not change hands, apparently. So it's not product placement in the conventional sense.
No.
There was no money. They just agreed to it. But they did a bit more than agreeing to it, clearly, because they allowed them to film in their HQ. There's all the, you know, the uniforms, the trucks, the branding, the packages, yeah, feature all the way throughout the movie. So it's a strange one, isn't it?
I also read that this film is the only reason, really, that What Lies Beneath exists, because they had to have a year-long break in shooting so that Tom Hanks could grow out his beard and lose 50 pounds of weight to emulate having been on a desert island for 4 years.
Mm.
And because Robert Zemeckis didn't want the crew to go off and get loads of different jobs and not be able to come back for the second half, he made What Lies Beneath with the same crew so he could keep them all.
I didn't know that.
Anyway, I suppose ultimately, although it's true that the FedEx plane crashes, customers, consumers, punters don't actually get on FedEx planes, do they?
Mm.
So the main part of the branding for the customer to take away is, A, what a great company to work for. They never gave up the search for him, and when he got home, he got a party.
Do they pay him for the 4 years that he's not been at work?
How does that count? Does that count as gardening leave?
B, their packaging is shown to be indestructible. It's a bit like the Samsonite suitcases on Lost,
right,
isn't it? The FedEx packages are part of what he constructs his life out of on the island, because they land with him and they haven't broken in their plunge to the sea.
Oh.
So all in all, it's probably a neutral promotion for FedEx, but with lots of brand awareness.
You mentioned Lost, and apparently after the success of this film, they pitched a TV series based on Castaway, and it was turned down, but it was shopped around, and eventually it was made as Lost.
Here's a question from Will in Michigan, who says, I've noticed that in many pictures of jesters... I mean, already it's a great... I mean, I've never seen many pictures of jesters
just
in my
couple.
Life. I've seen one or two.
Yeah.
they are holding a staff with a tinier jester's head at the top end of it. Now, I have seen that.
Oh,
yeah.
We're all with Will here.
We are, yes. I have tried to discover the origin of this device and what it might have been used for, even going through books on the history of the jester. Wow. But you, Helen, are my last hope. Answer me this. What's the deal with the jester's staff? What's the big idea?
I feel a bit sorry for Will that he did so much research and came up blank, because it wasn't all that difficult to find out stuff about.
10 minutes on the internet, I'm guessing?
It was more like 25, but it was...
Well, you're on drugs. You're on drugs, but, you know, still.
Not operating at full capacity, and yet I discovered that jesters did often carry these sticks. They're called marottes.
Mm.
And sometimes it was just a stick, or sometimes it had little bells on, or sometimes an inflated bladder, like a balloon.
Now, that is funny.
And sometimes that would be filled with dried peas, so you could do a sound effect. And there are various reasons why the staff had a little jester's head on the end. And one of those was just to indicate the jester's profession, because not all jesters were performing in a royal court with a uniform. People had one outfit in the Middle Ages often.
But I mean, if their main clothes are the ones that I'm imagining, which are like the red and yellow sort of plush.
If they were, but they often weren't.
And they're wearing a silly hat with that on. They really don't need that on the end of the staff as well. Like, I get it. Here comes the comedian.
If they did have that on the end of the staff and it matched, then cool, that's good branding. But a lot of them didn't have that uniform. They just had clothes.
So if they were just wearing t-shirt and jeans, they needed something to identify themselves as a jester, like Russell Howard's haircut in modern day.
Sure. Medieval t-shirt and jeans equivalent, because that was their only outfits.
And it probably wasn't very bright and colourful if it was all covered in shit as well.
And also, they didn't earn a lot of money because they didn't have a trade, and they weren't aristocrats. They were jesters, so they were kind of outside the conventional ways of earning money. So if you could get a position in a royal court, then great, easy street. But that was the high-end jester, the ones we hear about, but not every jester's reality.
So was it usual to have a staff that had other things on the end of it to indicate other things you might do for a profession? Like, did lawyers have one with a little wig on?
It's interesting because monarchs and gods had staffs.
Yes.
Jesters go back to ancient Egypt, ancient Rome. Those monarchs and gods are often depicted with a staff with maybe a bird on the end or a sacred animal or a face. And the jesters were kind of a fairground mirror version of monarchs, because they were meant to be the only person that could kind of smack talk the monarch.
Yeah.
And apparently the only person as well who could deliver real bad news to a monarch. That was often their job.
Okay, so that isn't just Shakespeare, like, having a laugh. That is that whole kind of conscience of a king shit is real.
Yes, they are this weird, this sort of warped reflection of the monarch. So their staff is almost a parody of a scepter.
It's a bit like Theresa May having an in-house satirist or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like hiring the writing team of The Thick of It just to sit downstairs and call her a dickhead every time she walks in the room.
One other use for the jester on a stick is that the jester was often performing alone, and therefore it meant that they had a patsy or someone just to deliver the jokes to.
A straight man, if you will.
Or to use kind of as a puppet.
Mm.
And then there's one theory that I have that I haven't necessarily been able to back up, that it's a weapon, because you can hit things with a staff, and jesters were often sent into difficult situations, like battlefields, rather dangerous places.
Like a stag knight at Jongleurs equivalent.
After my commute, when I find the time, I can always send a question to the question line. Inquiries are wanted, it's all part of the plan. A la Helen, or Holly, or Martin, the sound man.
Answer me this podcast.
Thank you very much to Bluffers Guides for sponsoring this episode of Answer Me This.
They are pocket guidebooks on everything you might want to pretend you know stuff about. So there's one on beer and one on wine and one on dogs and one on chocolate. What have you been reading, Helen?
I have read Etiquette and Jazz. I learned that Thelonious Monk's middle name was Sphere.
I'm guessing that was the jazz book, not the etiquette one.
Etiquette is just call him Mr. Monk until you're on first name terms. Etiquette was quite funny because it basically could have been called dealing with people in the upper classes who are several decades older than you and still have formal dinner parties.
Sure. I know enough etiquette to deal with people my own age.
What I didn't know is that you should never buy a tiara. You should only wear ones that have been inherited and only married women can wear them.
I did not know that either.
I could have made a real dick of myself.
Yeah.
And it had a very useful bit actually about how to write people letters of condolence.
Nice.
Which I think is something people feel like they should do, but they feel almost too awkward to say anything because they think, what can you say? And there's a letter in there that you could basically copy and just change the names.
I've been reading the one about cats.
Oh, what did you not know already about cats, given how much you love cats?
The exact right number and type of scratching post to provide for cats.
Oh, how many scratching posts do they need?
The right number, apparently, is at least as many as there are cats in the household.
Really? They don't share?
No, well, it's not that they don't. It's that it makes them anxious if they have to. And can lead to behavioural issues. So, a lot of people listening like me will have had two or three cats in the past and just had the one post. So that's something I learnt.
But if you don't care about cats or etiquette or jazz, they have dozens of other guides.
Yeah, golf, opera.
You can read one in an hour or two if you just want to brush up on something and learn a few funny little facts that you can drop into conversation.
Yeah, and all the books, including the all-new Bluffer's Guide to Brexit, are available for £6.99. And they are available with free delivery to UK addresses included when you buy them at bluffers.com.
Hi, Helen, Ollie and Martin the Sound Man. It's Lindsay from California. I'm currently sick, laying in my bed, drinking some cranberry juice out of the bottle. It's fine because I live alone. But I started reading the bottle, and on the back it has a picture of a smiling group of people, presumably the growers, as it's stated on the bottle. But they're standing amongst a field of cranberries, or in a field of cranberries, floating cranberries, or very, very large pile of cranberries, but I assume that there's a layer of cranberries floating on some water. But answer me this, is that how they wash the cranberries? Why are they standing in them? It grosses me out. Especially that little girl, doesn't even have overalls on.
The flooding of cranberries is a very important part of cranberry growing. So, sorry, Lindsay.
Cranberries got a flood.
They do, at least twice a year. They're grown on low vines, sort of like strawberries, you know, a low plant along the ground.
So they're not grown in water, because that's a common misconception, actually, isn't
it? Indeed, yeah, because of all the ocean spray ads, you think they're just grown in a big paddling pool. But no, they're grown in these beds, which are called bogs.
I know why the brand wasn't Bog Spray.
Cranberries are grown in sunken beds. Those beds are, for the majority of the year, dry. But they are flooded at two critical times. The first time in winter, because the water insulates them from frost, which can really just destroy your cranberries. And so they'll be flooded for several weeks in winter, up to about 3 months. And then maybe they will drain them and pipe off the water to somewhere else, because they do reuse the water, and then reflood them for a few weeks, late April, early May, to prevent a late frost damage or pests. But then they're flooded again for the harvest in October, and a harvester drives through and it knocks off the ripe berries off the plants, and those float to the top because there are air pockets inside the cranberry, and then they can kind of skim the top of the water to gather the cranberries.
Okay, but this picture that Lindsay's seeing on the bottle that's disturbing her of a little girl standing in cranberry bog, is that a bit like pressing the grapes with your feet, like in Greece when they're making wine? Is it part of the process that a person stands in it? Because when you say a harvester, that doesn't suggest a person standing in it.
The harvester is a vehicle, but then when they are gathering the cranberries, the fields are quite big, but they do wade around in them wearing waders to pull the cranberries somewhere where they can get them out of the water and send them off to be cleaned.
So it is still necessary to have people touching the cranberries.
It is.
So Lindsay, it is an essential part of the process that you're scoffing at.
90 to 95% of cranberries are harvested this way, and then the other 5 to 10% are harvested dry so they can be sold as the fresh or frozen kind of whole cranberry, because the others you sell them as juice or relish or dried cranberries, processed cranberries.
Hello, Helen and Ollie and Martin the Sound Man. It's Sam here from New York. It's my birthday on Sunday, and on Friday, a co-worker, very enthusiastic co-worker, gave me a gift and they said, oh, you're going to love it. It's the best present. It's just picked out for you. But foolish enough, I managed to lose it before I opened it. I'm going to be seeing this coworker later in the week, and I don't know what was in the present. And obviously, they're going to ask me about the present. What's the best way to style it out and pretend that I know what the present is without hurting my coworker's feelings?
Ooh, feelings are going to be hurt.
I think so. I don't think there's any way. You have to come clean. There is no other way. You can't style it out. That's it. Sorry.
I agree. I think you have to be honest about it. Maybe you can soften the blow by buying them a bunch of flowers or a bottle of a drink that they like or something like that and go, I'm really sorry. I mislaid the present before I opened it and I feel so terrible about it because I know that you put in a lot of effort to choose it. And they'll be like, oh, and you'll be like, oh no, I'm such a dick. What was in it? And they'll be like, it was a bread knife with a little hedgehog on the handle. And you'd be like, oh, that was my dream. And you might be relieved not to get whatever it was. Play up the remorse.
Well, that was my concern, was that some acting will be involved.
It will.
Because almost inevitably, if someone says, this is so you, this gift is so, I saw it, you will love it.
It's setting everyone up for a disappointment. You and them.
Exactly. They've latched on to a projected part of your personality of which you might not even be aware. Mm. It's certainly not going to be the thing that you think defines you.
What if it was a really excellent gift, though?
On a footnote, Sam, just judging by his vocal style, sounds to me like a Brit who's now living in New York and working there.
Yeah, use the accent privilege. If it's an American colleague, accent privilege all the way. Well, listeners, that brings us to the end of this episode of Answer Me This. I'm glad to be back.
If you have a question for the next episode, which will be out on the first Thursday of September, barring any more surprise illnesses.
Please no. Please no more surprise illnesses ever.
And then all our contact details are available on our website.
AnswerMeThisPodcast.com. You can email us a question. You can also record a question using the voice memo app on your phone or something and email that file to us so we can hear from you.
And also remember, if you want more Helen and Ollie and Martin, indeed, in your life, we have other side projects on the internet.
You mentioned The Modern Man earlier, Ollie, so you've got cruise ships coming up. What is already in the bank that people can binge whilst waiting for Cruising with Mickey?
I've got an interview out with the performance scientist, Dr. Steve Ingham. He's a guy who trains Olympic champions, like proper ones. He trained Jessica Ennis Hill from the age of like 17 or something to become a gold-winning Olympian. And even if you're not at all interested in sport, as you know, I am not. It's an interesting interview because he tells you basically about, I suppose it's self-help, isn't it? It's motivation. It's how do you manage to become a champion and put all your other wants and desires to one side. So that's available now, along with about 80 other episodes at modernmanwith2ns.co.uk.
Do you think you are now better able to become the athletic champion that you've always held back from being so far?
I think if you could see me now physically, Helen, the answer to that question would be evident.
My show, The Illusionist, is back after a surprise hospital break, and it is an entertainment show based around linguistics. And how many of those do you come across in your lifetime? I also have a lot of live dates coming up in September. I have a bunch around the UK, and October, November, I'm touring the US and a tiny bit of Canada. So that's at theillusionist.org. You can find the show and the gig listings. And Martin will be playing live music at those gigs. He's very good in them.
Thanks.
I'm glad to hear he has a function apart from just looking after your drugs trolley. And Martin, your podcast, Song by Song, tell us about that.
It's a podcast in which we talk about every Tom Waits song in chronological order, but we also talk about other music as well. And we have some fun guests. You can find that at songbysongpodcast.com.
Our friend Sam Clements, who makes the Picture House podcast, bought Martin as a gift the mid-90s film Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Mm.
Not starring Tom Waits, but with a bit part involving Tom Waits.
Mm. Oh, I didn't know that Tom Waits was in that, because obviously, like, my main focus when I saw it and I had it on VHS
boobs,
was to constantly
boobs,
rewind the bits where Keanu Reeves gets a hand job from a vampire ass. But good, I'm glad Tom Waits is in it too. It's shit though, isn't it?
It was unwatchably bad. We managed an hour, and that was good going, to be honest.
And I was on a lot of painkillers, and I couldn't make it beyond an hour.
I'm a Tom Waits fan, but he should not be the best thing about a film.
There are good people. I mean, that is directed by Francis Ford Coppola. It is starring
Gary Oldman.
Richard E. Grant, Gary Oldman.
Cary Elwes.
It is.
It's a stinker.
It's
a stylized stinker.
Even for the love of Tom, Martin couldn't drag himself through the whole thing. Maybe there's a supercut with just the scenes where Tom Waits is eating flies in his cell. Anyway, you can hear Martin talking about Tom Waits in a more enthusiastic way on Song by Song. We are also in your feeds halfway through each month with an episode from the Answer Me This archives, which are extensive.
Yes, but you need to subscribe to hear that episode. Yes. So make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Then just sit back and enjoy some more question-answering entertainment at a moment of your leisure.
We're here to be in your ears, as we have been for the past 11 and a half years, except for last month when I was in hospital, unable to speak.
Yep. What she said.
Why are you smirking at me, Martin? Why are you making a kind of angry rabbit face?
Because there was just one moment in his life where he could enjoy you not being able to speak, and it was tainted by sadness. it's a confusing emotion for all of us. Anyway, see you next time.
Bye! Bye.